ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। कश्चन लेलिहा अवश्य गरुदाद भीता कृष्णेन च विवाशितः। Of all the serpents, only Kaliya came to know of this affair, and in fear of Garuda, he took up residence in that Jamuna lake. Later, Lord Krishna drove him out. Krishnam hradad viniskrantam divyasragandhavashasam mahamani ganakirnam jambunara parishkritam upalabhya upalabhyotitha sarve labdha prana ivashasa pramoda nibratatmano gopa pratyabhari bhire. Resuming his description of Krishna's chastisement of Kaliya, Shukadeva Goswami continued, Krishna rose up out of the lake wearing divine garlands, fragrances, and garments, covered with many fine jewels and decorated with gold. When the cowherds saw him, they all stood up immediately, just like an unconscious person's senses coming back to life. Filled with great joy, they affectionately embraced him. Yashoda Rohini Nando Gopyo Gopvas Chakorava Krishnam Sametya Labheha Asan Sushka Naga Api. Having regained their vital functions, Yashoda, Rohini, Nanda, and all the cowherd women and men went up to Krishna. O descendant of Kuru, even the dried up trees came back to life. Ramas chakshutam alingya jahashasyanu bhavavit premna thamam kamaropya punar punapunar udakshata gavo vrishavacharayo lebhire paramam mudam. Lord Balaram embraced his infallible brother and laughed, knowing well the extent of his potency. Out of great feelings of love, he lifted him up on his lap and repeatedly looked at him. The bulls, cows, and young female calves also achieved the highest pleasure. Nandam viprasamagatya guruvasa kalatraka uchuste kaliya grasto distya muktasta vatmajaha. All the respectable Brahmins, together with their wives, came forward to greet Nanda Maharaj. They said to him, your son was in the grips of Kaliya, but by the grace of providence, he is now free. Dehi danam vijadinam krishna niramukti hetave nanda prita manara jan gasuvaranam tadadishat. The Brahmins then advised Nanda Maharaj to assure that your son Krishna will always be free from danger, you should give charity to the Brahmins. With a satisfied mind, O King, Nanda Maharaj then very gladly gave them gifts of gold and cows. Yashodapi Mahabhaga Nastalabdha Prajasati Parishvajankyamaropya Mumocha Suhukalamuhu. The greatly fortunate mother Yashoda, having lost her son and then regained him, placed him on her lap. That chaste lady cried constant torrents of tears as she repeatedly embraced him. Tam ratrim tatra rajendra kshutribhyam sramakarshita ushura vrajokasho gava kalindya upakulata. O best of kings, Parikshit, because the residents of Vrindavan were feeling very weak from hunger, thirst, and fatigue, they and the cows spent the night where they were, lying down near the bank of the Kalindi.
purport.
Srila Jiva Goswami points out that although the people were weak from hunger and thirst, they did not drink the milk from the cows present there because they feared it had been contaminated by the serpent's poison. The residents of Vrindavan were so overjoyed to get back their beloved Krishna that they did not want to go back to their houses. They wanted to stay with Krishna on the bank of the Jamuna so that they could continuously see him. Thus they decided to take rest near the river bank. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Vainama. Sukadeva Goswami, most enthusiastic to respond to the questions of Maharaj Parikshit. Because Maharaj Parikshit was so sincere, with such enthusiasm to hear the purpose of life and the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Shukadeva Goswami is so enthusiastic and anxious to tell him everything in regard to this beautiful Leela of Lord Sri Krishna. Yayatamam prapadyante tam stathaiva bhajamyaham. Krishna says that as we approach him, he rewards us accordingly. The Supreme Lord reciprocates according to our eagerness to have him, to know him, to love him, to serve him. And the representative of Sri Krishna, the spiritual master, he is Krishna's instrument in this world to reveal the glories of Krishna. Similarly, as the disciple is eager to hear the glories of the Lord, eager to serve Guru's instructions, to that extent, the spiritual master or the great Vaishnavas are very eager to speak. So here we find this great Param Guru, Srila Shukadeva Goswami. He is so happy, so joyful to see the eagerness in the heart of Maharaj Parikshit. And in this way, he is revealing very, very deep and confidential subject matters about Lord Sri Krishna. He has just explained the background of why Kaliya was living in this lake, close to the Jamuna in Vrindavan. He explained that Sobari Muni, who was a great yogi and saint, he was living under the waters of Jamuna. He was such a powerful mystic, he did not even have to breathe air. For years upon years, he could be on the bottom of the river, which at that time was very deep. And he was immersed in meditation, immersed in purifying his mind and senses through the yogic process. Of course, he became very friendly and very loving toward the fish of the Jamuna, which is natural, because a saintly person naturally becomes a loving friend of all living beings. And when you become friendly with someone, there is always that nature that we become very attached to those who are near and dear to us. And attachment is a good thing, providing it is all in harmony with service to God, service to Krishna. But when that attachment is contrary to the service of the Lord, then it becomes the greatest cause of bondage and fall down.
So Subari Muni, he had a material attachment for these fish. How do we know what is material and what is spiritual? If it is favorable for devotional service, it is spiritual. If it is unfavorable, it is material. It is as simple as that. So Garuda, he was a bird, and it was his nature, as it is described here, to eat fish. And he would come and he would regularly eat the fish from this place. So Subari Muni was thinking, this is not good. They are my friends. I am feeling sympathy for them. And he very boldly told Garuda that you'd never come back to this place. If you touch any of these fishes again, I will become very angry with you and I will curse you. So what did Garuda do? Right in front of Subari Muni, he just picked up the leader of all the fish and ate him. And this was a great offense, Subari Muni thought to him. So he cursed Garuda that if you ever come back to this place, then surely you will die. Now, because of this offense to a great Vaishnav, it is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyana Bujai. We cannot understand the mind of great Vaishnavas. But if, in the presence of their mysterious and inconceivable activities, we commit an offense to them, that our spiritual life has to greatly, greatly suffer. So Subari Muni obviously was actually thinking that Garuda was wrong, but at the same time, he knew he was such a pure, intimate associate and devotee of Lord Narayan, but still he cursed him. And what is the reaction of one who curses or commits an offense to a great Vaishnav? The reaction is Krishna takes away our intelligence. He takes away the mercy by which we can control our senses at all, and we become bewildered. So here was this Subari Muni who was living underwater, who had such incredible control of his mind and senses and his life errors. But because of this great offense against the Vaishnava devotee, his spiritual life was doomed. He saw two fishes in the Jamuna coming together for sex pleasure. And Subari Muni, just upon seeing this, became so infatuated by the desire to also enjoy this pleasure that he left the Jamuna. He left his meditation. He left everything. And he went looking for some nice young lady to enjoy. And ultimately, it's a long story which is explained in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam. He approached a particular king and asked for his daughter in marriage. The king said, any of my daughters that want to as wife, to want to be your wife, you can have. The daughters, they did not like him. As a sadhu, they respected him. As a sadhu, they could offer all respects to him, and they could hear philosophy from him. And they would cook prasad and ask him for blessings. But as a husband, not possible. He was very old. He's been living in water for so many years. That means his body was all old, wrinkled. His hair was all gray. Yes, as sadhu, we love him. But as husband, we cannot become enthusiastic. So they all refused to accept him. So Subari Muni, such a powerful mystic he was, that he was able to transform his body into that of a young, beautiful, handsome, princely personality. So handsome. What does this show? This is a very good example for all of us. Sometimes we are very attracted by people who can perform mystic performances, people who can perform great miracles. But here we see that sometimes people who could perform the most incredible, unbelievable miracles, due to their very great expertise in the yogic sciences, they cannot even control the grossest of their senses. We are attracted by such superficial shows. But the actual sign of a great personality is he has full control of his senses. He's using them all in the service of the Lord, nothing for himself. Being a great soul has nothing to do with demonstrations and performances of unusual behavior. So Subari Muni, actually, can you imagine? He was old, disheveled, and all of a sudden he became beautiful, young, fresh, handsome. So then all the princesses wanted to marry him. So he married many, many young ladies. And then he just lived a very nice household life, and he suffered like anything. He just suffered terribly. He was so much attached to the bodies of these young ladies, and he was just day and night trying to find the end of his longing to enjoy them. And no matter what, how much he tried to enjoy, the more his lusty desires just became hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. And it was such a frustration for him after years and years and years of trying his best to fulfill his desires. He was so embarrassed. He was so dissatisfied. He was suffering so miserably and so terribly. And in the condition of that great, great, great suffering, he started coming to his senses. Started thinking, what am I doing? What have I left behind? I was on the most highly esteemed and respected level of yoga. I was so many years upon years, lifetimes of tapasya to attain that stage. And I gave it up all for this. What am I now? I'm just like an ordinary karmi, materialist, just trying to make it in this world and suffering and never satisfied. Even though I have innumerable, beautiful, beautiful wives doing everything for me, young, still, there's no pleasure, there's no satisfaction, just pain in my heart. What have I done? What fool am I? It was really Krishna's mercy upon him that he was so dissatisfied. He was suffering terribly, and in that suffering, he sobered up. We become so infatuated by the glares of Maya in the form of sense gratification, wealth, prestige, sexual pleasure. We become so incredibly infatuated. It's just blinding to our eyes. We become so much overcome and overwhelmed by the phenomena that we cannot even see our own position. Like an intoxicated man who cannot even see, he's in an abominable state of consciousness. But when the pain of his heart was so deep, when he was suffering so terribly, when he realized that his whole material condition was hopeless, then he began to remember, actually real detachment and fixing one's consciousness on that which is beyond this body, that is real pleasure. That is the real purpose of life. So in this condition, he just left. How is it that it explains here by the acharyas, why is it that he was able, even though he offended a great Vaishnava, he had to go through terrible suffering for that. But because he also served a great Vaishnava, ultimately he was delivered. Because he was doing service to the river Jamuna. Kalindi is a great Vaishnavi, and he was worshipping her with great attention. And because he was constantly immersed in the Jamuna, and he received the blessings of Kalindi Devi, therefore, he had a blessing behind him. So this is the truth. Even if you do wonderful service to a devotee and have all of his blessings, if you offend another devotee, those blessings are there, but they are on hold. Eventually, they will save you. But because of that offense, you must suffer. You must fall from your spiritual position. So he fell. He completely became illusioned. And in that condition, after all of his spiritual prestige and all of his spiritual tapasya had been completely lost for the time being, after he suffered miserably and terribly for years upon years upon years, that was the atonement for his offense. And then the blessings of Kalindi was still with him, so he was able to somehow or other give it up. But it is described here that Kaliya knew this story. So he came to that river to take shelter after being defeated by Garuda, knowing that Garuda cannot come here to touch me because he will be cursed to die. So I could live very happily ever after here and build my kingdom at this place. Of course, this story very, very strongly explains to us how we should be extremely cautious and careful to never judge a Vaishnav by our material calculations, because if we do, we may offend them, and our spiritual life, our life as a whole, will suffer terribly. This is why this story is told in the Bhagavatam. And again and again and again we find even great, great learned personalities and highly advanced yogis, if they offend a Vaishnav, they have to suffer miserably. Duryodhana Muni, Duryodhana, again and again. So even the Yadu dynasty itself, Krishna wanted to demonstrate how severe an offense it is to misbehave toward a Vaishnava. Therefore, he wanted to make such a strong exhibition of this fact that his whole dynasty was vanquished because of one Vaishnava aparad. Krishna arranged it like that. The younger members of the Yadu dynasty, Samba and others, they wanted to humiliate and make an embarrassment out of great sages headed by Narada Muni and Parvat Muni. They were Kshatriyas. They were worldly men in one sense. They were managers of state. They were providers of families. And the tendency is to think that sadhus, they are of another world. They are not very practical. They don't know what's happening here, right? Isn't that the way most grihasthas think? Ah, these sadhus, they know how to do japa and yajnas, but when it comes to things of this world, we are the authorities. They are just useless. So they were thinking like this, perhaps. They went to Narada Muni and Parvat Muni, and they wanted to make embarrassment out of them. They dressed Samba up as a young Mataji, and they put some padding in his abdomen section to make him look just like a pregnant young girl. So they went to the great sages and they said, this young girl, we know that you know past, present, and future. Will this be a boy or a girl? And if whatever they said, whether they said boy or girl, then they would just take out the pillow and say, you're great sages, you don't even know, it's a pillow. It's not even a, this is a man. In this way, they would make laughing stock, make embarrassment out of the sages. Like, ah, you see, you don't know so much. We are so intelligent. So, is this going to be a boy or a girl? And Narada Muni knew, these people, so puffed up, rascals, I'm going to have to teach them a lesson. Okay. You know what's going to be born from this child's abdomen? A lump of iron which will be the cause of the destruction of your entire dynasty. Then immediately a lump of iron came out of Sambha's abdomen. What to do with it? They brought it to King Ugrasena. They said, according to the sages' curses, this is going to be the destruction of our whole dynasty, this lump of metal. He said, well, pulverize it. Let's just destroy it. So they just smashed it into powder, and they threw it in a river. And we know the story, that from those little pebbles of grew these iron stocks. The place called Prabhash, holy place called Prabhash. And ultimately the whole Yadu dynasty with those iron stocks beat each other to death. So Srila Prabhupada explains, this is how important Krishna wants us to understand the gravity of Vaishnava Aparad. That even, what to speak if you're a devotee? Sometimes you think, well, I'm a devotee, I'm doing nice service. It's all right for me to criticize other Vaishnavas. I'm protected by all the service I'm rendering. I'm chanting every day. So if I do some aparad, if I try to destroy someone's character, if I blaspheme someone, my chanting of Hare Krishna will protect me. But Krishna wanted to show that even if you are his own intimate family member born of him, if you offend a Vaishnav, you will lose everything. He made a big, large exclamation point in his warning never to offend Vaishnavas. Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya called it the mad elephant offense. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that you can make a nice garden, and it takes years upon years upon years to grow this garden, all the flowers, fruits, trees. But if you allow a mad elephant into the garden, within seconds he will destroy everything. Similarly, we can be practicing Krishna consciousness for years. We can be practicing bhakti for lifetimes. But if we grievously commit an offense against Vaishnavas, it is like inviting the mad elephant into our heart. You see, when the mad elephant comes into the garden, he doesn't kill the plants. He just levels them to the ground, so they're just invisible. But ultimately, again, they will grow. But it will take a long time. Similarly, neha bikramanasosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhayat. Whatever advancement we make in Krishna consciousness is never lost. That is a fact. But when we commit aparad, Vaishnav aparad, then all of the results of all of our spiritual activities are just leveled to the ground. They become totally unmanifested. And only weeds start appearing. And until those offenses are thoroughly atoned for, which may take lifetimes, then again, those devotional seeds which have been planted long, long ago will start to grow. So this is we must be very, very aware and careful to take the lessons from the Bhagavatam in this regard. And what is Vaishnava Aparad? If you make a mistake and accidentally bump into a Vaishnava with your foot, you are not going to fall down. You should just, I am sorry, in Vaishnava etiquette, you should take the dust of his feet and say, Haribo, I'm sorry. Glories to Guru Maharaj. Vaishnava aparad, if it is just a matter of transgression of etiquette, or making a mistake, or not knowing better, You will easily be forgiven if you just make some atonement. But when, out of pride or envy, we are personally trying to destroy the character of someone or impede a person's spiritual progress, that is serious aparad. That is a mad elephant. Your spiritual life will be severely damaged by that. Unless with all humility at our disposal, we fall at the feet of that Vaishnava and beg forgiveness, and beg the entire assembly of Vaishnavas to forgive us, and beg Krishna to forgive us. And if we do that with a sincere and honest heart, we will be forgiven. And if we don't, it will be held against us by God himself. There will be no refuge from the wrath of the Lord. And his wrath is generally, he takes away our spiritual intelligence. And then we just ultimately become puppets in the hands of Maya. So the residents of Vrindavan, it is described here, they were just in so much of the anguish of separation by Krishna's being harassed by the coils of Kaliya. But here it is explained, the grand, wonderful celebration that took place when Krishna came out from the Jamuna after defeating Kaliya. He appeared more beautiful and more wonderful than ever before to them. He came out of the Jamuna with beautiful golden jewelry and beautiful silks and wonderful, wonderful garlands. And he was just effulgent and illustrious. He was more splendid and effulgent than even before to their eyes. Which shows this? That when a devotee is put through terrible conditions of tribulation and trial, if he somehow or other bears it with devotion to Krishna, even if it takes a long time, then ultimately when he comes out of that situation, he is more empowered, he is more effulgent, he is more divine than ever before. That is a fact. Krishna wanted to demonstrate that by his own example. Sambhog and Vipralamba. Sambhog means to meet with the Lord. Vipralamba means to feel separation from the Lord. They are constantly united with one another. Without separation, the joy of meeting is not so sweet. And without the expectation of meeting, love and separation has no meaning. The sweetness of separation is the anticipation for the coming meeting. If in separation we know that we will never meet again, separation has no joy. It's simply miserable. But in separation, if we're just counting the moments, counting the days when I will see my beloved again, then that separation becomes a cause of great ecstasy. And similarly, when we are meeting, the imminent understanding that there will be separation just makes us so much concentrate in joy that every moment I have with my beloved is so precious because he may be gone very soon. So in spiritual ras, separation has no meaning unless there is meeting. Vipralamba has no meaning without sambhog, and meeting has no real meaning without separation. And here we see a practical example of this. Such separation they were feeling from Krishna while he was in the coils of Kaliya. They could not bear it. But then when he came out, such a joyous festival. They would not have had such a joyous festival if it was just an ordinary day and he just came back with his cows. Such a joyous. They were calling the Brahmins and they were all just like life coming back into their hearts. Nanda, Yashoda, Rohini, how they were embracing the Lord and how they were so happy, and all the friends and all gopis and all the cows and the calves. But at the same time, while they were intensely separating the reunion with Krishna, they were simultaneously in fear that it might happen again. They were calling Brahmins to give him benedictions to protect him from the chance that it may be again. Something like this. So this is the spiritual ras of Vrindavan. The constant enhancing of ecstasies of separation and unity. And this is actually how our love grows through this process. Is there any questions? Yes?
So far I'm only attained perfection. But generally speaking, it's said that unless one takes shelter of the Vaishnava that he offends, that he cannot get relief from that suffering. So although he may have executed some seva toward Mother Jamuna, still it never states that he went to Garuda and begged forgiveness for his offense, and still he attained perfection.
But it is to be understood that if he actually realized his suffering condition and why it happened, that he did from the core of his heart realize his mistake and beg forgiveness.
But his mentality in the Bhagavatam was that he saw the two fish engaged in sexual activity. He thought that this was the cause of his fall down. It didn't say that, you know, well, I offended Garuda and I had to go and take shelter of him. His consciousness in those verses in the Bhagavatam was that he saw the fish engaged in sexual activity.
That is the external cause. What type of perfection does it say he attained?
He says he went back to the spiritual world with his 50 wives.
They were lucky. So what is the answer, Panditji?
I'm asking you.
I would like to read it over again in the 9th canto. But It was, in one sense, it is obvious that if he attained a pure state of consciousness through this terrible suffering, that he must have understood his offense and at least within his heart atoned for it. Externally, he understood that it was because of the fish. But if he was actually in a condition of wisdom, he must have understood the root cause. And again, if Garuda and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seeing his condition, seeing his suffering, seeing the terrible tribulations and bondage he was in, by their own sweet will, obviously, they forgave him. If you're forgiven, you're free from the offense. He was obviously forgiven. He was in a very special position. Without forgiveness, you could never become free from that condition of life, of suffering. Obviously, he was forgiven. We can understand philosophically, he must have been forgiven. And how exactly he went about being forgiven, whether he actually approached Garuda, but it's not said, whether it was in his heart, or whether simply causelessly they decided to do so. But he was forgiven. And that is the main point. Unless we're forgiven by that Vaishnava, Krishna will not forgive us. Garuda must have forgiven him. If he didn't forgive him, he couldn't have attained perfection.
If someone commits an offense heavy Vaishnava offense for which his devotional service is devastated, say, for this lifetime, and he has to take birth again, he can't remember the offense that he committed in the previous life. Is it that this offense simply wears off? There's a certain reaction time one has to undergo for committing offenses to great devotees? And
ultimately, if we please Krishna sufficiently and refrain from committing offenses, Krishna will forgive us from all previous offenses. If we want immediate relief, we have to beg forgiveness from that Vaishnava. But if we do not do that, but we do engage in the process of devotional service, and we please Krishna, and he sees that our offensive mentality is not there anymore, then Krishna will gradually forgive us from these offenses. No doubt. We can offend Vaishnavas, and if somehow or other that Vaishnava dies or something like that, and we cannot beg forgiveness, if we give up that offensive mentality and really engage in the service of Krishna and the Vaishnavas, Krishna will forgive us. He will see. He punishes us. Why? He doesn't punish us simply because of the offense. He punishes us because of the mentality that caused the offense. You understand? If he sees that through the execution of devotional service, the mentality to offend others has been gone, then he will forgive us of all previous offenses, and he will bring us back home, back to Godhead.
Well, in the case of, say, somebody like Durvasa Muni, he was running from his offense, form of the Sudarshan Chakra. He went all the way to Vaikuntha. He was begging forgiveness from Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan said, you may have given up your offensive mentality, but you still have to go take the dust of the feet of Maharaj Ambarish. The offense wouldn't cease until he went and took the dust of it.
That is because he had the remembrance and the power to do so. Do not have the remembrance and power to do so, Krishna is all merciful if you give up that mentality. The fact is, Ambarish was still waiting there fasting. If he didn't go back, Ambarish would have never eaten. Huh? So Durvasa Muni knew exactly what his offense was, he knew why he was suffering, and he knew Ambarish was simply humbly waiting for him. So in this condition, if you give up your offensive mentality and you don't act according, then you haven't really given it up at all. Huh? Actions speak louder than words. If you really felt, I have offended this great soul, then that feeling is meaningless unless he goes and falls at his feet. But that is something different than what you are saying. If you are saying it's a future life and you don't know where the offense was and you don't know who you've offended, then if you just give up that mentality, Krishna will relieve you if you're not offending again anyone. But if the person you have offended is present, if you've given up your offensive mentality, it has no meaning unless you fall at his feet and beg forgiveness. Just like, for instance, there's a story, I will not mention names, but there's a story of one Gaudiya Vaishnav who actually committed an offense to his guru just before his guru left his body. And then his guru left his body. He couldn't fall at his feet and beg forgiveness. He was gone. So he was wondering, what should I do? So, of course, in his heart, he had to fall helplessly at his guru's feet and beg forgiveness. But his guru was not there. So he was given a particular tapasya by a great Vaishnava. And this tapasya he performed for about 6 months. And the whole time of his tapasya, he was chanting so many lakhs of rounds a day, of names a day. He was fasting. He was living in a very simple place of seclusion in the middle of a river. Huh? This has just happened, just recently. And through this process, the whole while, he was simply begging his Guru Maharaj and Krishna to forgive him. And he was forgiven. That means you're sincere. Durvasa Muni's asking Krishna to forgive him without going back to Ambarish Maharaj has no sincerity unless he's willing to humble himself before that devotee. But if that devotee is no longer present, or if you don't remember why you're in this particular situation, simply by giving up the offensive mentality and engaging in devotional service, Krishna will forgive you. In due course of time. Any other questions?
Aspect of this first of the Yadu dynasty. Actually, they were cursed twice. One time when Samba got the rage or the curse of the sages, but there was another time after the Battle of Kurukshetra when Gandhari came out on the battlefield to find her 100 sons. So after she found them all, she was greatly aggrieved. So Krishna was with her. So she said, she turned to Krishna and she said, "You're the cause of all this. You could have stopped it, but you didn't. And therefore I curse you that 34 years from today."
The example that Krishna wanted to demonstrate through this curse. Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad purport that Krishna wanted to demonstrate the power of the chastity of a woman. Krishna arranges everything to teach examples to us. He arranged through Samba and Narada the grievous effects of that will come upon anybody who offends a Vaishnava. And through this he wanted to show that if a woman is chaste, then she develops such powers that she could even destroy through those powers the dynasty of God himself. Prabhupada explains that just as a man through celibacy, brahmacharya, develops great shakti, power, in the same way a woman, by her chastity, develops tremendous power of God behind her. And to offend a chaste woman means to bring wrath upon your life.
Burnt the fingertips of Yudhisthira.
And he was scared to death of her.
Bhima hid behind Krishna, actually.
Bhima didn't mind facing any of the most heroic warriors in the battlefield and beating elephants with his fists. He was destroying the biggest, most hungry, man-eating rakshasas like Hidimba and Bakasura. He had no fear of them. Just, "Mataji, I'm going to kill that Bakasura." Hidimba, no fear. He had no fear of anything, Bhima. But he knew that Gandhari was a chaste woman. And he knew that the fear, the power of a chaste woman is greater than any rakshasa or any kshatriya or any warrior. And therefore he was so afraid of Gandhari. It was the first time in history of Bhima's life that we see him hiding behind someone, hoping he's not seen. Generally, he was very aggressive. And Yudhisthira Maharaj also was an utterly fearless person. He had no fear of going before Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya in battle. No fear at all, not even hesitation. And Arjuna, such a mighty, fearless warrior he was. But when they saw that Gandhari was angry with them, they were all trembling and shivering with fear. It is described at the kingdom of, what, Virat, was it that? When Yudhisthira
when he was, when the king was about to get angry with him, he slapped him in the face or something, right? Threw dice at him, huh? And he was bleeding. Yudhisthira had to hide his face because he knew that Arjuna, Bhima, the Pandavas, if any of them knew that anybody touched him even once, they would destroy that person. Right? And here Gandhari just burnt his fingers, right? Or his feet, huh? Was it his fingers or his feet? She burnt his fingers. And the Pandavas, they didn't think, oh, we will destroy her. They were hiding. She may do that to me too. You're so fearful of the chastity of a woman. So this is also a vital understanding for anyone who hopes to make spiritual advancement. If we offend the chastity of a woman, of a chaste woman, then terrible wrath of God will be upon us. And a woman who has that chastity, even though she may be very mild and very, very humble, she develops a tremendous amount of shakti. Any other questions? Sri Galim, any other commentaries?
Well, there's the story when she wanted to give protection to her son, Duryodhan. So she asked him to come to her place naked so that if she saw his whole body, she could give him protection. She would somehow or another protect his entire body. So he was walking toward her place completely naked. Somehow or another, Krishna came there. And he said, "This is not civilized to walk around with no clothes on. You must at least put a gumsha on." So he put a gumsha around his thighs, his loin area, and then he went before her, and she lifted her blindfold, and she saw that he had something on. She said, "I told you to come here completely naked, and now this part of your body is not protected." He said, "Why have you done this?" And he said, "Well, I was coming here, and Krishna told me to put this on." And she immediately could understand there is no way to protect this son. It's not possible.
You said that when she, because of her chastity, what was the exhibition of her chastity was a woman who is chaste should never think she's better than her husband in any way, shape, or form. This is what chastity means. If a woman thinks she's better than her husband, she's unchaste. So she was thinking, because I can see and he cannot see, I will think I'm better than him because I have something he doesn't have, and that will make me unchaste. Therefore, to keep that feeling of complete chastity and subservience to her husband, she blindfolded herself and vowed that she would not see the light of day. But because she was performing that tapasya, she gained such great power that anything that she looked upon would become invincible, undefeatable. So she understood, after she looks once, then so much of that power is gone. She couldn't do it again. But it was all stored up. When we restrain our senses, those senses get great power. So she saw, I haven't seen anything. Whatever I see will become invincible when I first see it. So as Sri Galim Prabhu was saying, Duryodhana came before her. And she knew that this war was going to take place. So she picked up her blindfold, and when she saw him, every part, Prabhupada says, every part that she saw of his body became as hard as steel. Became like iron. It was undefeatable, undentable, invincible. But Krishna said, this is misbehavior. Coming before your wife, you should at least cover your private parts, your mother. So that part, the base of his back, his thighs,
we're ordinary. And Prabhupada, when he tells the story, he says that she said, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna has told you to do this. Krishna has tricked us." She realized that ultimately we cannot go against the will of God. What Krishna wants will be done. Krishna has done this. He has foiled all my plans. Mare Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mare Ke. Krishna wants to destroy you. No arrangement in all creation can save you. And if Krishna wants to protect you, there's no power on earth that can harm you. Thank you very much.